What would happen if we had the boldness and the presence to lean into our edges and grow from our core? See, in a world that's shaped by yesterday, constantly chasing into tomorrow, I'm inviting you into a conversation where lifestyle, business, and consciousness share the same office space as your purpose and your brand. This is the Supernova Podcast, and I'm your hostess, Lena Ski. Whitney, welcome to the Supernova Podcast. It is so exciting to have you here.
Thank you, Lena. Oh, you know what? Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes.
Lena? Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll do it again. Just to be sure.
It's perfect.
Thank you, Lena, for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
It's an absolute pleasure. And I was just mentioning offline just before we started, you've made such an impression on me from those amazing webinars or seminars, however we can call them, that you've done with WebEx on this amazing body of work that you've put out into the world. So I just wanted to, again, honor you in that.
Thank you, Lena. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, that S-curve, I know we're going to get into it in the podcast, but it was just so fascinating to kind of see, like, yes, there's finally something that's bringing growth into the picture, that's bringing learning into the picture, and helping us reshape cultures and companies and our own growth, even within a company or in our own startups, however it is that we're doing it, in such a meaningful way.
That's so good to hear.
So I just wanted to kind of speak into your background, because you're known as an innovative disruptor theorist. You're obviously an amazing keynote speaker and performance coach, and you're the author behind Building an A-Team. And knowing a little bit of your work, I know that you just have a fascinating, completely out-the-box description for what an A-team is. Because I think I have this feeling that we settle on what that word should mean, but there's so much more richness to what it could actually mean. So could you share what that means to you?
Yeah, so maybe if I give a little bit of background of how I got to this idea or concept of an A-team, does that work for you? Okay,
absolutely.
Fantastic. So one of the big ahas that I had when I was working as an equity analyst, I was working on Wall Street, I was analyzing stocks in the emerging markets specifically, and trying to understand, you know, how companies created value, how they destroyed value, trying to get my financial models right every single quarter to see, you know, were the companies going to be able to beat the street's estimates, were they going to underperform, etc. And this was around 2003, 2004, and I came across this book called The Innovator's Dilemma. It was written by Clayton Christensen at the Harvard Business School. And the basic gist of his ideas, or the theory of disruptive innovation, is that a silly little thing can take over the world. And that silly little thing might be, you know, the automobile overtaking the horse and buggy, because it was silly when you first started. It can be the light bulb overtaking the gas lamp. And then more recently, we've seen things like Toyota disrupting General Motors, and Netflix disrupting Blockbuster, and Uber completely overtaking, or not completely, but trying to overtake cabs. Mm-hmm. And so this whole idea to me was like, this is really interesting. And it was very helpful as I was trying to pick stocks, because I realized that every single quarter, the reason that the wireless companies, America Mobile, was beating my numbers and completely destroying my numbers, really, was because they were disrupting fixed line telephony. And so all of a sudden, in reading this book, The Innovator's Dilemma, I had this understanding of, oh, this is a framework. This helps me understand what is happening in this industry and why they keep beating my numbers. As I started to ingest that framework, I remember a few, I don't know, within that year, I found myself thinking, okay, I've been doing this for about 7 years. I feel like I'm pretty good at it. I've been institutional investor ranked or an award-winning analyst for all 8 of those years, and I want to try something new. And I go to my boss and I say, you know, I'd really like to have you potentially sponsor me to go into the management track. And he said to me, well, really, no, really, we like you right where you are. And so I'm like, huh. Well, let's think about this. This theory of disruption, it applies to products and services, but it does it also apply to people? And that was the big aha for me, that this could actually apply to me as well. And that if I wanted to move forward, I was going to have to take a step back. And so within the year, I left. So that was the beginning of me thinking about this idea of the framework of personal disruption. So I end up co-founding an investment firm with Clayton Christensen. I end up getting really steeped in these ideas or these frameworks in how it applies to investing. But I kept thinking, how does this apply to us as people? How does it apply to us as people? And so that's when I had another big aha, which is that this S-curve that is used has been popularized for over 50 years by E.M. Rogers, who was a sociologist. Mm-hmm. It was helping us understand how quickly an innovation would be adopted. But could it also help us understand people? Could it help us understand how we learn and how we grow? And when we start something new, what does that look like? And if I can explain it really briefly, because it's important in terms of thinking about building an A team. Mm-hmm. So if everybody who's listening can picture an S. Now, it's kind of an unusual S. It's sort of you're at the bottom of a roller coaster, you know, at the low end of the S, and you climb the roller coaster, and then you get to the top of that S before it's time for you to go down off the roller coaster again. And so from a product perspective, when you introduce a product, you're at the low end, growth is slow. But then once you reach a tipping point, which is that knee of the curve that we just talked about, you're moving up the roller coaster, 10 to 15% penetration of market, you accelerate into hyper growth. And then at 90%, or saturation, the growth tapers off. Mm-hmm. The aha for me was, okay, what does this mean for us? What does this mean for you, for me, when it comes to learning? And so I thought, well, every time we start something new, we start a new project, we start a new role, we start anything, we're at the bottom of that S. And the S-curve math tells us that initially your growth is going to be slow. Lots of time will pass and it will look like nothing has happened, because that's what the S-curve math looks like. Mm-hmm. That helps you avoid discouragement. And then as you put in all that effort, you start to accelerate and gain momentum, and you move into the sweet spot of the curve, that steep part where all your neurons are firing. And it's the exciting part where it's hard, but not too hard. It's easy, but not too easy. And then you get to the top of the curve once you've started to master things, and growth is going to slow, even though you're really good at what you're doing and it feels great on the one hand. On the other hand, because you're bored, you're not getting that dopamine hit of learning. And so it's time for you to start all over again. So you have this learn, you move up the curve, you leap, and then you repeat. And that's how we are created. Like we're wired to be learning machines. Mm-hmm. So I'll stop there for just a second and see if you have any questions, and then we can move on to what that means for building an A team. But why don't I hit pause? Cause I've been talking for a couple minutes.
Well, I just love the whole learn, lean, repeat. Did I get that?
Learn, leap, L-E-A-P.
L-E-A-P.
Yeah.
Repeat. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just also on that leap, I mean, it's that courage to lift off. That's what's kind of coming up to me, because that's where things really start getting exponential. That's where things really started getting really, really, really interesting.
Yeah. So what's interesting is once you get to the top of a curve, you have what Clayton Christensen called the innovator's dilemma, because he said, you know, whether you innovate or not, there's always risk. If you don't innovate, you risk being upended by a lower end of the market competitor like Netflix did to Blockbuster. But if you do innovate, it's terrifying, because you have to basically disrupt yourself and completely change and do things differently from the way you've been doing. And in the case of personal disruption, you're jumping off the top of a curve, like to do something brand new. And so that's kind of terrifying. So that's why it's called a dilemma, because whether you jump or not to a new curve, it's still pretty scary.
Yeah. And I love that framework of just bringing it back to yourself. Like disrupting an industry is quite big, but bringing it back to disrupting yourself, actually, it could feel even scarier because it's so much more personal. But it's like, right, that's where the real growth is. And that's where it's really tangible. And yeah, so just bringing that perspective shift in, it's going to be exponential. It will disrupt the industry anyway. because you're just
running. Yeah, exactly, Lena. That's such an important point. You know, one of the things that was interesting for me is after I wrote Disrupt Yourself, I would have executives say to me, well, I'm not going to let anybody at my company read this book because they're going to leave. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, yes, that's probably true. But if they're going to leave, it's probably because they got at the top of the curve and you had nothing new for them to do. So they had to leave because their brains needed to keep learning. And the only way to learn was outside of the organization. But the big thing, the big learning that I wanted to convey in the next book that I wrote called Build an A-Team is that if you as an organization not only want to retain talent and lower your cost of hiring and all that involves when you've got this revolving door, but if you want to be innovative as an organization, you have to make it possible for people inside of your organization to disrupt themselves, to learn, leap, and repeat and do that over and over and over again. And when you're willing to let the people in your organization disrupt themselves, then you as an organization or as a company can then be innovative and you avoid being disrupted. So people talk about like disrupt or be disrupted, but I'm saying let the people themselves have this opportunity to try something new. And then that the rest, you know, the disruptive products and services and innovation, et cetera, will all happen on its own.
It almost becomes a byproduct of that.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Exactly. Mm. You let the people do it because the fundamental unit of disruption is actually the individual. Yeah. So let me tell you how I got to this idea of the Build an A-Team. So here you have, you know, every single person in your organization, in your company is on a learning curve, including you. And the next step for me was this idea that every single organization is a collection of those learning curves. So you and I, we're all on these learning curves and our organization, our company is a collection of those learning curves. Well, what we found in our research is that you build an A-Team, a team that's optimized for innovation by having 70% of your people on your team at any given time in the sweet spot of that learning curve, so on the steep part, and we can talk in a minute about why that is. At any given time, you want 15% of your people at the high end of their learning, so where they are starting to get bored, but there's an important role that they play for your team. And then you want 15% of your people at the low end of their learning curve, where they don't know very much and they're pretty inexperienced, but they also play an essential role. And so when you can optimize where people are on the learning curve from a team perspective, that's how you're going to be able to be really innovative and move your organization forward. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, if you as a company are thinking, you know, everything's been going really, really well, I wonder if we're a risk. Like, are we potentially going to be in a position where our competitors are going to take things, you know, the rug out from underneath us? Well, all you have to do is take the pulse of your workforce. And I have a diagnostic where people can go online and if you want, you can include it in the show notes, but it's whitneyjohnson.com/diagnostic. Okay. So you can have your team take that learning curve and then you can plot out where everybody is on your team. Like, you know, do you have three people at the low end? Do you have three people at the high end? Do you have seven people in the middle? And if you want to know if you're about to get upended by a competitor, just take the pulse of your workforce. If you have too many people at the high end, you're actually at risk because what happens when you're at the high end? You're bored. And if you're bored and you're not learning, then you're going to leave or you're going to get complacent. And that's really bad because then you're just sitting there and nothing's happening.
And equally, also, obviously, if there's too many on the low end of that curve as well, there's just not enough momentum potentially happening there. So somebody else could speed track over you as well.
Well, that's an interesting insight. Yeah. So at the low end of the curve, absolutely. One of the things that you want to do with your people at the low end of the curve in terms of why you need people at the low end is that they're asking questions. So on the one hand, they don't know what they're doing, but that also means they're not blind through familiarity. So they're capable of asking like, well, why do we do it like this? Maybe there's a better way to do it. Mm-hmm. And for us, for anybody who's in the sweet spot or even at the high end of the curve, those questions can be annoying because it's like, well, that's just how we do it. Or it can also feel kind of threatening because it's like, well, you're saying, how do I do it like this? So are you saying that I somehow am obsolete? And so our ego starts to just get really big. And so that opportunity to innovate at the low end starts to get obliterated because we're not allowing them to ask questions that will allow us to not get steamrolled, like you said, by someone else at the low end because they are asking those questions.
And I'm just so glad that you threw in that word obsolete, because there's this big question that that seems to be going on a lot, and it's something that I'm also speaking into, so obviously I'm a little bit biased towards it. But with the future of work changing, and we could talk about it about being machines, but there's this big desire to be relevant. And it feels like that S-curve and refining the A-team to not say that it's all about expertise, but it's all about this learning curve, really kind of keeps you in that sweet spot, which is, I guess, why it's called the sweet spot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think, you know, it's interesting when you use that word relevant, because what we're really saying is when, you know, at a more existential level, we want to remain relevant so we can remain competitive, but we want to remain relevant so that we believe that we matter. And that's always the existential question. And you're absolutely right. This is a prescription for that. It solves a lot of problems from a business perspective, but also from a personal perspective. Because if you're continually finding ways to learn, and if you're learning, then you're going to be reinventing, then you won't ever be irrelevant. You'll be at different stages of your life, and you'll be different stages of your careers, but you will never be irrelevant, because there will always be some way that you can contribute in a very meaningful fashion.
Beautiful. So can you tell us about, like, because I know you mentioned you were going to speak into it a little bit more, and just that sweet spot and why it is so important to really place the energy there, rather than this old culture of let's just have this board of expertise.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I touched on a little bit at the low end of the curve why you need people at the low end, because they don't have experience and they can ask really important kinds of questions. Well, what happens when you get to the sweet spot? And in any given time, you want 70% of your people here because they they know enough, but not too much. And so one of the things that you want to think, or two things you want to think about once you get people into the sweet spot of their learning, is number one, don't just say, well, they're doing a great job, I'll just leave them be. What you actually need to do is you need to really impose constraints and give them friction and give them lots of stretch assignments, because that's how you're going to get the innovation that you're looking for in your organization. I'll give you a quick story that really captures this idea of why this kind of friction is so important. It's partly what allows the energy of the S-curve to build, but it's also how you're going to get innovation. There's a story told of a man who wanted to buy a truck, and it was not a work truck. He just wanted to buy a truck. And so after he buys a truck, his wife or his partner, the other member of his investment committee, she had dissented. And so he's really eager, like, I'm going to show her how valuable this truck is. And so he's like, I'm going to go chop wood, as one would logically think. So he decides to drive up the mountain. It's early October, but there's snow. We're in the Western Hemisphere, Northern Hemisphere. We're also in the Western Hemisphere, but in this particular case, the fact that we're in the Northern Hemisphere is relevant. So there's an early snow, and as he drives up the mountain, it gets, you know, the snow gets steeper and steeper, and the roads get slicker and slicker. And so when he finally parks, the truck gets stuck in the snow. And so now he's like, okay, what am I going to do? Not only do I not know how I'm going to get down the mountain, but I'm like, how am I going to extricate myself from this situation with my wife? So he just gets out of the truck and he's like, well, I'm here, I'm stuck, I might as well do what I came to do, and that is to chop wood. So he chops and he chops and he chops and he chops for several hours, loads the back or the bed of the truck up with wood. And now he's exhausted, but hope springs eternal. So he decides, okay, I'm going to try one more time. Turns on the key, and magically, or as if by magic, I should say, the truck is able to get unstuck and go down the hill. So the lesson here is that it was the load of wood that allows him to drive down the mountain, the constraint, if you will. And it's the constraint or the load that allows us to climb a curve. It's the law of physics. We need friction in order to climb a curve. And so for us, when we're managing people who are in the sweet spot, instead of saying they're fine, I'll leave them be, we give them stretch assignments where there's the real risk of failure. And as we do, not only do they really put their learning into hyper growth, but it also gives them an opportunity to test and bump up against constraints and innovate in a way that's very meaningful for your organization. That's the first piece of advice, is to give them constraints, to give them challenges, to give them friction. And the second piece of advice is to not forget to appreciate them, because they're not the problem child. But if you don't pay attention to them. If you ignore them, they could quickly become a problem child.
How so? Is it because of the overwhelm? Is it because they could go in so many directions? Is there a nature
to that? Oh, I love that you're asking these questions. So it's not the overwhelm necessarily, because you're constantly calibrating, although it could be the overwhelm. I love that. So I was thinking of something else. So let me explain what you said, and then I'll come back to what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. So it can be the overwhelm. If you're giving someone a stretch assignment, there is the risk of failure, because that's what a stretch assignment is. And sometimes when people are in the sweet spot, we look at them as high potentials. And there's been research done that actually says that people are reluctant to give high potentials stretch assignments because they're afraid that they'll fail, which is like completely makes no sense whatsoever. But you've got to, when you're giving people stretch assignments, to monitor it. And if it's not working, to calibrate them, maybe you get them additional resources so that they can figure out how to move up the curve, because you are leading them up the learning curve, either because you're teaching them or facilitating their growth. So that's something you have to watch. And if it's not working, to be their chief encouragement officer, the CEO, and say, you know what, it didn't work. What did you learn? Let's keep going. The second thing I would say, though, or what I was thinking, is that back to what I said earlier, we all need to feel that we're relevant. We all need to feel that we matter. Mm-hmm. And if we're working really hard and we're not getting any of that, hey, good job, I appreciate that you did this, I appreciate that you did that, that worked really well, because we're attending to our problem children at the low end of the curve or at the high end of the curve, then they start to feel like they don't matter. And so being able to give sincere, specific praise, to say thank you, helps them stay motivated while they're on that steep part of the curve.
Yeah, and I can also see it being kinder as well in that fire, to kind of keep them growing, because otherwise that motivation can deflate and then momentum can deflate and so everything else can just deflate in that place.
That's right. And again, because it is the steep part of the curve, right? So it is going to be tough. It is going to be challenging. So that ends up being very important.
I wanted to just go back to something that you mentioned in the very beginning. And just out of curiosity, if you found this a lot, when you wanted to move into managerial track and they said, no, we like you where you are, do you find that a lot more people are open to growth, or a lot more companies are open to growth, or is there still quite a big resistance there?
I think it depends on the company. I would say yes. In general, I think people are more open to it than they were 15 years ago, because the world is changing and we want to retain really good people. There's still a lot of reluctance around that. And, there was a study done by Boris Groysberg out of Harvard of looking at 450 companies, asking them to rate themselves on a number of actually 20 different HR practices. And the one that has the lowest score, like every year, it's typically, not unusual, is job rotation. So we as organizations aren't very good at allowing people to jump to new learning curves. Mm-hmm. And so while on the one hand we think to ourselves, yeah, learn, personal disruption, it'll drive innovation inside our organization, there's some pretty good reasons why we don't do that if you think about it. So like, for example, if you've got a star performer, why are you going to move them to a new role? Because they're doing you a lot of good right where they are. And so in the very short term, there is a loss of efficiency that comes by, and possibly even, a loss of your own standing, because you're not potentially going to be able to deliver the same results that you did deliver if you let this person move. So there's some reluctance there. And then the other piece is that we tend to say, well, why would I hire people for potential at the low end of the curve rather than proficiency, when I can, I know I can get people who can do the job today. That shortens the shelf life, right? Because after 6 months, they're bored out of their mind because they actually already know how to do the job. Mm-hmm. So there are some really good reasons why we don't do it, even though we know it makes sense longer term. But I would say in general, it's happening. My sense is it's happening more because people are more aware of it. And they're also understanding that if they want to retain their really good people, they're going to have to give them opportunities in-house or they will leave.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously there's the millennial market. That seems to be very aligned to this. And speaking as a millennial, any organization that would be doing this, and if I was looking for a job, I'd definitely, prioritize that company over another company. But I can also just imagine, Yeah, this just this deep desire to grow and to find oneself, because there's so much change happening in the world, and we need to, it feels like we do need to learn these new skill sets on how to be a lot more adaptable. And this code really like holds that in such a beautiful way.
Well, thank you. And I think, Lena, you brought up something important about millennials. It's interesting. I think it was McKinsey that did some research on what are some of the top priorities for millennials in the workplace. And they want to learn. You want to learn.
Yeah.
And I think that that's been really valuable for us to know. It's still, people are still reluctant to do so. I'll give you a quick example. I was talking to a high growth tech startup, and they were telling me, you know, it's a very hot tech market or hot market. And so engineers are in huge demand. No one can hire engineers. But when I started to drill down, I found out that they can't find engineers that are 3 years out of school, because no one wants to train them. And so basically, for any company who's willing to hire the recent graduates, then there's not competition because no one wants to hire them. So you're going to get the absolute best people because no one is trying to play in that particular place. Yes. The good news, so then there's like, well, if I train them, they're going to leave. But the fact is they may not, you may not, because if you're in an organization that is willing to develop you, where you're able to learn, what we know from the research is that you're actually going to be pretty loyal. There's this whole idea of millennials job hop. Well, the fact is that the reason you're jumping jobs is not because you're a job hopper and you think that's really awesome. You're job hopping, and you can tell me because I know you're an N of one, but you're job hopping because you're saying, I'm not learning and I want to learn. And so I'm going to go somewhere where I can learn. Yeah. There are other reasons, but I think that is an important reason.
No, and I can see that in my own kind of career path from working within companies to kind of moving to being more on my own. The minute I felt like I couldn't learn, or I hit the top of the mastery patch and I was like, I'm just feeling really bored right now and there's no scope for growth. I was out of there.
Yeah. And I think that your generation is really doing the rest of the labor market a favor, because for Xers and boomers, where there was a sense of, oh, I've just got to pay my dues, and people stayed at jobs longer. And because you're saying, you know, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go do something else. You're actually paving the way for other people to be willing to set a higher bar or higher standard of what they, you know, when they take a job, like what kind of boss do I actually want to hire here? And I think that's a really important and useful development.
That's I love that, because it's one of the things, I guess, lecture as well, is I'm always so surprised when people go for job interviews and they're just doing all the jumps and the circus act. And it's like, but which company do you want to be working with? Who do you want to be hired by? Like, you're
in this
process as they are. It's not a one trick show. And then coming back to the other point, this is not just learning, this is culture. This is like the embed road into creating culture in an organization.
Absolutely. You know, if you think about it, every organization needs a culture in order to grow. And it's like a vine. People need something to attach to. And what I love about the S-curve of learning framework, and obviously it's mine, so I love it. But but one of the reasons I love it is that it allows every single individual in an organization to understand that we need to take responsibility for our own learning, but it also provides a manager and a leader a language and a structure to operate within. I had a conversation with a CTO not too long ago, and he was saying, you know, I have this person on my team. He's really high potential. He's fantastic, but I've noticed he's been kind of cranky. And then I drew the S-curve for him, and I explained to him what was going on, the neuroscience of what was happening in his brain. And I said, I don't want to lose you. I think you're at the top of the S-curve. What curve would you like to jump to? Because we want you to stay here. And because of that framework that they could have a conversation around, the person, this high potential person, they were able to say, okay, let's figure out how you do X, Y, and Z. And so that, again, it gives you a framework for thinking about managing the individual learning of people, this language, this way to operate. And then again, going back to your word that you used earlier, the byproduct is that you not only retain people, but you're also able to maintain your competitive edge as a company. And so it's really exciting to me to see how those pieces all fit together.
Yeah, because I mean, it's the company cycle, it's the product cycle, as you said, it's the creativity cycle. and I shared that I was working in that industry, so I could also see it a lot there. It's the personal growth thing. And it's also like as a brand develops, everyone's stepping more into their values. So it feels like the S-curve can just be applied in so many different ways and so many different dimensionalities.
That's interesting. Would you mind sharing a little bit more of what you meant when you said that? You said as the brand evolves, people can step more into their values.
Yeah. So one of the things that I see in culture, at least, is, I mean, we can always prescribe, like, this is going to be a culture of no compromise or a culture of love or a culture of togetherness. Mm-hmm. And that could all sound really great. But if it's not attached to what the brand is and or the best version of what the brand is trying to stand for, that obviously creates some sort of disassociation and tension. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's much harder to sell into that because there's obviously going to be a lot more conflict to make that leap because it's the leap into the unknown. But if there are values kind of coming through, not only around, say, growth, but values around, say, companies that work in truth or companies that work in integrity or companies that work in that, this now becomes a place of like, can you see how you're living up to these values and embodying the brand values? Because this now then becomes an internal marketing thing, like you're really embedding yourself into the way of learning and being part of this culture.
Yeah, interesting. And I, you know, what's fascinating is that, like, if you are, I remember a few years ago, someone asked me to write a piece and it was like, if your employees are happy, I think your customers are going to be happy. Mm. Meaning if your employees, and I don't mean like happy in a sort of hedonic sort of way, you know, we're feeding you all the time. I mean, happy in that you are challenged. Happy you feel like you are growing, happy you feel like you are learning, then that is going to spill over into them or you or I wanting to make our customers happy because there's a contagion effect of that general sense of well-being, which goes back to something that you shared with me is that you love, what did you call it? The well-being economy? Is that what you called it?
Yeah, it's a concept called the well-being economy. Mm-hmm. So it's this whole idea, it's by a book, it's by an author, Professor Lorenzo Fiamanti, and he's kind of talking about the economy's not really growing. We're making all these things, but there's no real growth in that. And we're driving to work, we're feeling anxious, we're feeling all these different things. So we're not actually at the best in our best places, or we're not really honoring our communities in certain ways. So this works from both the individual all the way up to the organization. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do we bring back in that holistic well-being? And really honor the growth and the learning and that culture that needs to be happening there.
Yeah. So I would come back to of like, if you've got the well-being, so it's not, you know, the pleasure, but just the sense of well-being with your employees.
Like a thriving element.
Sorry?
Like it, for me, it feels like thriving.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Well, I know we could now expand the conversation into 10 billion other directions now that we've anchored all those different things. And I'm also so aware of your precious time. I'm sure you've got a lot of things that you need to be doing. So what would you think is the most important seed to plant, apart from obviously website links and all those things that we'll be putting in the show notes, to really invite people into their sweet spot?
Yeah. So one thing I would say, I have a couple thoughts there. Number one is we didn't talk about what happens when you're at the top of an S curve and you can't necessarily jump for whatever reason. It might be that you're the CEO and founder. It might be that you've got young children at home and you need to just kind of stay in this work. So one of the things I would say is when you get to the top of the curve and that happens, then it's time for you to become really mindful and jump in place. And that can look like you get a coach. It can look like you make a commitment to study your industry every day, to study how to become a better leader, so that you're able to jump in place, even though from a role perspective, you can't necessarily, or you're making a choice, I should say, to not jump to a new curve. If you're managing people and you find that they're at the top of the learning curve and they don't want to jump and you can't make them jump, I remember talking to a fellow, I was speaking at SAP in India, and this mid-level manager, his name is Sumit Shetty. He's an engineer. He was telling me about this team he had inherited and they didn't want to jump. He couldn't make them jump. And so he gave him a stretch assignment. So you can give stretch assignments for people in the sweet spot, but they also work at the high end as well. Mm-hmm. And they had to deliver this presentation to senior management. They had always prepared for those presentations in one way. And the presentation was okay. And he said, you know, we're going to up our game. So he had them practice. And they complained and they really, really, really complained. But at the end of the year, because the presentation had gone well, when they asked, okay, so year end review, what's one of your highlights? It was giving this presentation. And so people, again, this goes back to this idea that we've been talking about, is that people want to learn. We might kick and scream, but we want to learn. And so that would be some of my advice for you when you're at the top of the curve or you're managing people at the top of the curve. In terms of the seat itself, I would just go back to this idea of we're all on learning curves, every single one of us. If you look at your life, you'll find that you need to learn and then leap and repeat over and over again. On average, a curve is about 4 years, beginning, at least for us in the United States, in high school, you're 4 years of high school, 4 years of college. It just honors this biology of our needing to change and try new things. And so for people who are listening, I would say if you're at the low end of the curve and you're feeling discouraged, you're supposed to feel discouraged. So just be patient with yourself. If you're in the sweet spot, then find ways to continue to really press yourself and figure out, like, how much can I push myself so that I really can innovate in this sweet spot of the curve? Because you've got the luxury of doing it. You're feeling good. You've got that luxury cognitively, emotionally, even financially, to push yourself in the sweet spot. And then once you're at the high end of the curve, if you can jump, then understand that it's supposed to feel a little bit scary and lonely, but that's what disruption is. And when you're willing to do all of those things, when you're willing to disrupt yourself, whether it's you as an individual, whether it's you as an organization, that is how you're going to not only be successful as an entity, but also be happy. Because as I said earlier, we're learning machines, and the thing that motivates us beyond money, even beyond praise, is the opportunity for us to learn.
Absolutely. And even if we go through growing pains, which we all complain about at some point in time, it's always so worth it.
Absolutely. 100%. It always is.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Whitney. As I said, we could go on forever.
We could.
Yeah. Then thank you so much for bringing your voice to this work and this body of work through. So can you just quickly name the books, if anybody?
Yes, absolutely.
Fast track.
Yeah, so one of the best ways to find me is at my website, whitneyjohnson.com. I have a weekly newsletter that I send out that's always very,
amazing.
It tells
amazing.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. Yeah. I tell a personal story and then talk a little bit about, it's actually almost always personal. Talk a little bit about, the most recent podcast. And so you can get the newsletter and you can get the podcast there. Mm-hmm. And also see the books that I've written. The most recent one is called Build an A-Team that we've talked about, with Harvard Business Press. And then prior to that, I wrote Disrupt Yourself, which we've been talking about a bit. And then prior to that, I wrote a book called Dare, Dream, Do. Remarkable things happen when you dare to dream, which is a little bit more personal. It's like having a cup of hot chocolate and talking about how do you know what your dreams are and how do you execute them and believe that it is your privilege and birthright to dream. So again, probably easiest way is to go to my website, whitneyjohnson.com.
Beautiful. And I'll definitely be adding all those links in the show notes.
Great.
Thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Lena. I so appreciate your being willing to have me. I'm honored and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much. And looking forward to your next delicious newsletter.
Thank you.
So there you have it. There's no more room at the edge of maybe. In fact, maybes have been taken out and scrapped all the list altogether. Because you're not just in business to create products and services. I mean, that might have been what got you out of bed this morning. That might be what's getting you to pay the bills, but you're here to own so much more. You're here to encapsulate so much more and embody so much more. You're actually in the business of creating openings, shaping connections, and establishing engagement. And this is your exact moment in the space-time continuum to find yours. because you are moments away from being in the whole new class of emergence and sharing your genius in a very unique, bold way. This has been Lena Ski for the Supernova Podcast. And if you like this, love this, absolutely roared about this, check on over to our Patreon page because there's some extra awesome things happening there for all our patrons. And of course, we could always do with more exponential love to really catapult this future of work into the way that's actually going to make a difference in the world. But, and so much more, if you're ready to become magnetic, evolutionary, and a whole lot more in charge of what it is you're putting out into the world, and intuitively design the products, businesses, service, solutions, and the talents you need to discover and deliver that thing that's unique to you and the DNA of what it is that's being birthed in this moment, you're going to love everything else happening over at www.lenaski.com. See you there.